Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
September 2013,
and that was one of our studio cats. Here in Illinois, it is cold, cold, cold. It's 4 above tonight, where I am. And some of our guests are coming in a little bit later from South Dakota, where it is even colder. So with that happy note, it's like, okay, that's not a good thing. Monique Johnson is in Tahiti, everyone, so she doesn't even know what cold is right now. We're going to do a pre-recorded a tea talk of hers that she had on YouTube some time ago. And it applies very much so. It's called When You Can't See Clearly, Surrender. So right before that, I do want to say that next Wednesday will be our last show before the new year. And so, you know, a lot of people make resolutions and all for the new year, and some of them are to quit smoking, quit drinking, quit eating, whatever. Next week, we have two guests, Gwen Holdenberry and Janet Schmidt, who this year have both, well, I shouldn't say, one has quit smoking this year, and one is on her third year. And they're going to come in and talk to us about that particular addiction. So that's something to look forward to. And now we have Monique. And now we don't have Monique. Okay. We shall shortly. It's one of those things, I guess, Mercury seems to be retrograde even when it isn't. And my darling little kitty is not really helping. So I do not know where, oh where, Monique, where are you? I'm having one of those days. It was set up, but so much for that. I have to find it all again. Okay. Now, finally, we've been waiting, and here we go.
Good morning. This is Monique Johnson with Health Movements International, and today's tea talk is actually a water talk. It's finally gotten hot in Texas, so forgive me if I spontaneously combust outside here. So today what is on my heart is the concept of surrender. And I also call it quitting, just giving in, just giving up, just letting it all go. The benefits of knowing how to do this is that it can help, for me, it helps me to recalibrate in life, to realign. And when I am able to do that, I'm able to stay on my healthy path easier. And it's also kind of a check-in for me to see, okay, you know, am I still doing what I'm here to do on this rock? Am I still being authentic? Am I, you know, am I still integrating all the learnings of life? So I call that surrendering, quitting, giving in. So those are kind of the benefits of how you can use this tool in life. And it's funny, I kind of call it sometimes with friends, recalibration. I find that I have had this in the past, and I am going through it right now. Do have a shirt on, y'all, but it is very hot. So what I am going through now, I find, is that I have in my business, in my journey with my business, I have gone to all these trainings. I have, you know, had my 500 hours in yoga, which is a place I love, Kripalu. I've done my dance training, conscious dance, which is like journey dance, and I love Let Your Yoga Dance. That's a beautiful practice, too. I did my massage therapy training with Thai body massage and my holistic health training and my reflexology training and meditation training, yoga nidra. So, I mean, I've gone out and I've explored all these things that fascinated me. And I built a business, a nice business that helped myself as well as others to make money. But in me, I do understand that I feel it is time to surrender it all. So I have pulled back many of the things that I am doing in the business world as far as yoga. I used to teach at studios, and then I own my own studio. And then, you know, I've taught at different facilities, workshops, retreats. I feel like I've done it all. And at this point, besides the experience and hopefully along the way somehow helping others, I feel it is time to surrender in all of that. Just surrender. I started this yoga journey with doing retreats, and that was my first love. And I still think I feel the most fulfilled in my business world when I am doing retreats. It's still very much a part of my heart. The only thing I have not given, you know, kind of thrown back into the bucket or surrendered to is my the yoga and meditation classes that I have at the addiction center that I teach at weekly. I still feel that is definitely a part of the journey right now. And it feels very fulfilling. It keeps me very connected into my yoga, meditation, and dance and all of that. But who knows what's going to come out of this. When I surrender in things, when I just give in and I give it all back to the universe, basically I'm saying, I give this all back to you, universe. And whatever I am to do, whatever, it depends on, you know, the situation, but whatever is mine, whatever I'm to do something with, bring it back to me. It shows up. When I throw it all back in and I just sit and I observe and I stay open, then I'm able to see what path I'm able to actually, I need to in my life, use all these learnings, what part it plays in my path, meaning it comes back in a flow. So, and I do have some other friends who are out there in what I call recalibration or surrender mode or just giving it all back. To those friends who are out there and we're doing this together, you have a sister over here who's doing the same thing. But what I find when I do this is the outcome is the exact manifestation that I need or that is to be in my life. I've had to do this quite a few times in life. Well, at least three, I know. And I think the last time not the last, but one of the bigger times, too, that I had to do this was in looking for a partner in life. I had, of course, gone through partners, you know, and learned and healed and beautiful people that I had met and had, you know, had relationships with, intimate and non-intimate, all. And then I was able to see what this person brought to it. You know, this person taught me that I love to be cherished. Another person taught me that I love when another person honors my innate strength. So I had all these different learnings that I had from different relationships, but they did not show up in one, as one being coming into my life. So what I did is I surrendered to it all. I honored all of the different learnings that I had learned in regard to what made me happy in a relationship. I honored all the quote-unquote mistakes I had made. I honored all the healing I had did to be a good partner for another person, for another being. And I just put all of that in a bucket, and plus all the relationships I had, put them all in a little ball, and I just threw them back in the universe, and I surrendered. And I was just like, you know, and the surrender, what the words of the surrender in that situation was, I don't care if it's male, female. I don't care if it's white or black. I don't care if the person's tall or short. You know, because I had all these lists of what I thought a good mate would look like for me, a good partner. And I just put it all back in the universe, and I said, I don't care what you bring me, but I do know that I need a partner in this life to, if I am to lead an authentic life and to do what I knew I was here to do on this rock. So I said, I know I need a partner, and I gave that to the universe. And I tell you what, I even went so far as to say, and if I don't get a partner, that's fine too. I will sit for the next 40 years and watch TV. But if I'm here to do a certain thing in life, to bring a certain energy to this rock, this realm, I'm going to need some support now. And that's what I told the universe. And I just left it at that. So I'm in the business world, and that's kind of what I'm saying to the universe as far as my business world. I've built business. I've, you know, owned a studio. That was not my journey. I really kind of did it because the ladies that I opened it with, I felt they needed a little bit more courage because they really wanted to do it. But I've done that, but, you know, there's so many experiences that I've had in this business. There's so many trainings I've been to that I've learned. And I know that each one of them I was exactly to do, and my journey validated that every step of the way. But I also know I am not to do this thing that I call business on this rock and to feel like it is work. It is to be from the well of my passion. And when I'm moving in business from the well of my passion, it doesn't feel like work. So I got to a point in the business that it was starting to feel like work. It was growing at leaps and bounds and da-da-da, but it was beginning to feel like work. And that's my aha. Ooh, I am at a spot that I don't know from the mind what step to take next. So when I get there, that's my cue, surrender. Give in, just give up on it all. So I put it all in this little box and, you know, this little circle of energy, of learnings, of trainings, and all of that. I wrap it all up figuratively, and I am throwing it back out into the universe. And I am telling life in the universe, I have no idea what to do with it. So I surrender. So that's what I'm doing. So maybe we both can see what comes out of this. Who knows? Maybe who knows what's going to come from it. I know next month I will be teaching yoga in Cozumel, July in Cozumel. And the only other thing I know is that I am, for now, going to be continuing these classes at the Addiction Center. I think.
And so, Monique Johnson,
Recording this in the summertime, the tea talk was called When You Can't See Clearly, Surrender. And she will be back next week from Tahiti. She'll be here live. So we'll see her then. And now we have two of our special guests here. I think I've got the right numbers. Chitandi, you're here?
Chitandi, yes.
Six. Say your name again, I'm sorry.
Hi. My name is Chitandi Bulger.
Chitandi, okay. Chitandi Bulger, and you
Bulger.
Are... Okay. I don't have it at all. Chitandi Bulger, you're in South Dakota, and I believe that we have Jim with us, am I right?
I'm here.
Yes, okay, and Jim LaPointe, who is in California. So you, Chitandi is with the... I'll probably mispronounce this too, Tetuan Grandmothers Society, the Winter Relief Fund, and this is on Facebook. We're going to talk about this in a little bit. Jim is with the American Indian Movement in Orange County, and I'm really, really glad to have you both here because there's so much that so many of us in this country don't understand about Native people and the problems. I just wanted to ask both of you, what is the biggest problem facing, I don't know, I'm trying to be PC here, is it First Nations, Native Americans, however, what should I say?
Jimmy, you want to get that?
Yeah, I for our intents and purposes on the show, I would say Native Americans.
Native Americans? Okay, we can do that.
As far as the issues to face, there's a lot of issues, and so it's really kind of a more complex question. That's like probably 10 questions in one on that.
Right.
As far as that goes, I would say part of what causes many of the problems is corruption in tribal governments.
Okay,
one of the prime problems.
Corruption in which government?
Tribal governments.
Tribal. Okay, I've heard that too, that is one thing. But I think that also corruption in the federal government, because companies are paid to maybe build on the reservations or something, and they really stick it to everybody. I mean, they put up block buildings and charge as if you were having some kind of fine stone and wood. So it seems like there's a lot of that going on. But now, are the tribal governments, is this an elected position, or is it just passed down, or is it appointed?
It is indeed elected positions, but let me be clear. The problems that are in the macro are also in the micro on the agencies. So we are also looking at poll tampering. We're looking at all the other problems, cronyism, nepotism. These are the same problems that have existed for the last 40, 50 years on the agencies, and they're still. Only the names have changed. We have to make changes within that system.
Right.
But I would actually get back to our more urgent cause right now.
Yes.
Where lives are actually at stake. So I'd like to focus, if we can, on Chitandi's work with the Tetuan Grandmothers Society.
Yes, and it's like, if you were going to ask what is the problem in the United States, I mean, we could talk for hours.
But how
that manifests, how this manifests, we can sit and ask why our elders are sitting in trailers with holes in them in minus 25 degree weather until we're blue in the face. We can try to figure out who messed up, and who's doing what. But the bottom line is that it happens, and it's happening every year. But
yes,
this particular year, the winter came early, and everyone that tried to prepare early got a big surprise. And all the propane has been used up. A lot of people are out there, and they do not have the resources that they need to pay for propane, to pay for electricity. Some houses are heated with electricity only. They're living in substandard homes. And yes, the tribal government is supposed to winterize. They are supposed to come out and make sure that their heaters work. I have a lady that lives in a house that the heater is hooked up on, but they wouldn't come out and fix a little, I think it was a duct, and clean it out so that she could turn it on before the winter came. And she's still waiting for them to do that. That was the first lady that we helped. And she was coming back from the hospital. She had just had a pacemaker installed. And she was sitting there with a little itty-bitty space heater in front of her. And we were able, one of our donators was actually able to get her a propane heater. So that's what started this, seeing the need, and not really, I mean, we, like I said, we can talk about what's wrong and try to fix it later. The bottom line is that it needs to be fixed now. And there's
people are going to get to death. Now, you mentioned the elders, and a lot of them have grandchildren living with them, I understand. So
yes,
it's
there's not enough housing. There's not enough housing on the reservation.
Oh, wow. Okay. And now, right now, we're talking about Pine Ridge and Rosebud in South Dakota, I believe, right? It probably
That's
holds
correct.
True a lot of this for everywhere. But this is the one that you're familiar with.
Yeah.
So, when and I wanted to ask, when Jim said the agency, exactly what did he mean?
I believe that Jim.
The agency is the representative government. It's also another term for reservation. In the sense that I said it on the agencies, that would be the reservation. If I speak about the agency does this or that, that would be the tribal
right.
government does it.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought, but I wanted to clear that up. So, but back to South Dakota. Now, I know that Katandi has been working with people, putting out the word, and you had some wonderful people donate money and
yes,
actually just call up the propane companies and with their charge cards. And so I want people to understand that you are, you know, you don't care whether you handle the money or not. It's not that kind of a thing. You would just as soon they call the company.
No,
make a
actually, I prefer, and so do the grandmothers. The Tetewan Grandmother Society, they were represented illegitimately by a person out there. And basically what he did was he put up a website and he said, here I'm collecting donations for these people. And they didn't see the money. And to be absolutely honest with you, that happens a lot. So when I came to help, they said that they wanted me to do it this way. And so the way that it works is I make a list, I go out there, I visit, elders refer, the grandmothers refer people to me. I get phone calls from people, you know, I get referrals, and the list goes on. And what happens is when you call and make a donation, all I do is basically I'm a dispatcher. I give you the name and the address of the next neediest person or elder or family with infants or family with disabilities on my list, and then you call the propane company and you donate under that person's name. So I never see a dime.
Okay.
Yeah, what you mentioned earlier about somebody who actually was being fraudulent about this, you know, if I did, which I don't, if I believed in the hell, I think there is a place for people like that, because I, you know, that is such a horrible thing to do, to make money off of the pain and suffering of other people. That's just, it's beyond words. Pardon? I'm sorry, Jim?
It's also rampant out there. Not only are people doing this around this particular issue, but other issues as well. There's a church group out there that's making money, and they were making money off the images and the story of a boy who had committed suicide. Now, Pine Ridge Reservation has the highest teen suicide rate in the country.
I did not know that.
It's also the place in the country. So they've got their challenges out there already.
Right.
And
Go ahead with the church group.
Just as an example, this church group, one of the pastors had actually shamed this boy, and he ended up committing suicide. They shared that story, and they were sharing his image, and they were making money toward their effort by putting their failure right out there.
Tell them why, Jim. Let them know why it's not okay to shame a boy like that, as opposed to in society off the agency, off the reservation, and on the reservation.
This is bullying.
This goes beyond the standard. Once again, we're looking at different demographics than most of America is used to looking at. Again, we're looking at the poorest reservation in the United States. We're looking at the highest teen suicide. So, I mean, there's a lot of different aspects. Now, traditionally, you know, we're a humble people to begin with. But we do have our human side. We have our pride in who we are and in our ways.
Well, sure.
Now we have a young child who's forming, developing. This child was 12 years old, and we have a church group that's out there and publicly before the child's peers, shaming him before those peers is just enough to drive someone who's living in those conditions right over the edge.
Yeah.
His grandmother came home later in the day and found him. It was too late.
Oh, my God.
After the fact, they posted his story and collected donations to say that that's a need that they have.
Right, because they were making money off of something that they did, but they weren't admitting to it.
Right.
Pushed him up against the wall. I think that's horrible. I remember as a child reading about southwestern part of the country, Navajo and Hopi, I believe, where the missionaries there again went and basically stole the children, put them in so-called Christian schools, beat them if they spoke their native language, and has stuff like that, has that happened in Pine Ridge and Rosewood?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's
happening.
In the foreword of my grandpa's book, it's happened. He was one of them.
Wow.
And so, yeah. My ancestry is, I'm Sichanji Lakota. I'm Rosebud Sioux. But
okay.
I was through an adoption. I'm from La Pointe, from Pine Ridge. So I've got family on both agencies.
Ah. I see that. Yeah, I don't know that much. I have a little bit of Cherokee blood in me, but it's way back and it's such a small amount. I don't know. Even before I knew that as a child, we would go to Wisconsin. I always liked to go around where the Native people were. And I always liked Native dolls. I had some kind of a fetish almost. And then I was grown when I found out I actually had some Native blood in me. But I just, everything I hear about the treatment From the beginning in this country, how the natives were just used and abused, and it still goes on, though. But like
you're
saying,
that's the part we need to make people aware of, is that it continues today in different ways.
Yeah.
It continues today. Going back to the point. I'm sorry if I caused a digression.
No.
When we designed the program that we have with the Tetelon Grandmother Society, the reason we designed a system where the donors call the propane company directly is because there is a hands-off of the money. That way the donors know who they're giving their money to. They know it's legitimate because we never touch it. It was designed with all of these profiteers in mind.
Yeah, and I mean, it's too bad that you have to do that, but it's obvious why. And it's even, you know, you feel it's even worse when it's other Native people who are doing their share to rip off the brothers. I wanted to ask you, how many people are on the reservation, the agency there? About?
Pine Ridge numbers are around 40,000.
40,000. Now,
Rose says 7,000.
Again, in multi-generational houses.
Right. Now, Rosebud is near Pine Ridge, right?
Yes, they actually adjoin.
They do, that's what I thought. And how many people, or was the 40,000 the combination, or how many's in Rosebud if 40 was for Pine Ridge?
I'm 7,866.
No, really, it's a little over 7,000 the last I looked.
Okay, yes, okay. And do these two work together quite a bit?
Well, they certainly have the same problems in common.
Yeah.
A lot of the efforts do combine to serve both agencies.
Yeah, I would think. Has there been in maybe more recent years, in the last 10 or 15, has there been more so-called Christian organizations coming around?
Well, they've always been, so it's hard to tell when they're more of them or less of them.
Right. Have they done anything really worthwhile? I mean, I know that's a loaded question, but I mean, when you think about this child who was just pretty much thrown under the bus and committed suicide because of stupidity on their part. I mean, do they do good? Have they been?
Katanda,
like,
you've talked to the people. I know the answer, but I'd, because you have talked to the people and have their statements, I'd like you to answer that one.
Yes. There are church organizations out there. They're doing a really good job, but they're highly underfunded. A lot of the problem that I'm seeing is that the people that are being underfunded, they're so busy, like me, trying to do the work that they don't have big money, and they don't have big money. You know, they don't have big administration budgets that they get off their 501c3s like these other people do. And what winds up happening is the little bit that comes is it doesn't go very far. And there are other organizations out there that are doing well, but there's just as many that are corrupt.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really difficult.
Right. The outside organizations that come in, besides the church groups, what other ones come in, or are there any others?
Other than church groups?
Yes.
Yes, there are.
What kind of groups come to help?
There are people that come to cut wood. There are people in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly anybody comes out in the winter. But in the summertime, people come out and they cut wood and they try to winterize the homes.
Okay.
There are other programs that I'm aware of. but I'm in the process of finding out. I don't want to say anything bad about any one program until I get all the information.
Right.
So,
that's
but
good.
I look on a daily basis. I look at the internet and I say, "Ooh, this is awesome! What a wonderful program!" And then I ask the elders and I ask all the people that I talk to, "Oh, have you heard about so and so? Did you know that you can call and ask them for a new house? Did you know that you can call them and get them to come out and do organic gardening? Did you know that you can, you know, I mean, for all these different programs and for all the people that I ask, they tell me we've never heard of that."
Wow. So these are organizations that are collecting money?
Yep.
Yeah.
That somebody would have heard of them.
right. But, yeah, they probably couldn't even find the reservation. That's horrible, that kind of thing, because in the first place, it's the people who can barely afford it who give money. And I know you found that. I mean, some of the people that have been donating do really have it, but a lot of times
what?
It comes
I can
the
tell
poor
you.
People.
I'm sorry.
No, yeah. Sometimes it just comes from the poor people who are having trouble getting by themselves, but their hearts are so big that they will give what they can.
It does, and that's very true. One of the organizations that I can say that helps a lot is One Spirit. Yes, they're out there giving food as much as they possibly can. They have a program that they try to give jobs whenever they can to people that can cut wood to go deliver it to elders. You can see it on their website. I don't have it in front of me, but if you just Google One Spirit, they're really good.
Okay, good. It's good to have, you know, at least one that we know of. And like you said, you're checking out others too.
Yes, I am. The Lakota Winter Project is another one. And these are, when I say Lakota Winter Project or I say One Spirit, everybody knows about that. You know, most everybody knows me now.
Right. Well, you've been out.
They know Tetewan Grandmother Society now. You know, and one would think that if these other people were actually out there doing the work, that a lot more people would have heard about them.
Yeah. I mean, because things like that, people don't keep to themselves. I mean, when they will tell somebody, "Oh yeah, you know, we got help from so and so, whatever." And since nobody's heard of them, that's very suspicious. Myrna Yuckbear is with us now also, and she's in South Florida. Yeah. Hi, Myrna.
Hello. Hello.
We've just been talking about different issues and the heating being a major one right now. You did mention food. Is there a shortage of food right now? I mean, in winter, is it worse?
Who are you talking to, me?
And anybody, somebody, yeah.
Well, I'm from the reservation and from Porcupine District, and I'm from a district where we don't have services. We have Common Sense, which is about 12 miles away, and you know the convenience store that they don't carry a lot of food. It's just fast food, and so... our problem is like we go to Sioux Nation, which is about 25 miles away, and it's a tribally owned store.
Okay.
But many people can't even afford to go over there, and what income they get is spent on traveling to, you know, here and there, because there's no laundromat, no clothing store, nothing. And we have a CAP office here, a community CAP office, but we can't go there and ask for help because we have some people in there who are in there politically, and so they control everything. So, like, we go in there to use a copy machine to make calls, and they said, no, this is for our use. It's hard for people to get someplace to buy food or get food.
Sure. Well, we were talking about the corruption before you joined us, Myrna. It just seems like there's so much, and just like that, they won't even let you use the phones there or make coffee. And convenience stores very, very seldom sell anything that's fresh, like vegetables and fruits and things. And it's very unhealthy to live on cans and packages. So
yes, and the food stamps don't last a whole month. You know, they're probably 3 weeks. Within 3 weeks, they use up the food. And but what happens is that the convenience store, Common Sense, open up at midnight. So on the 9th, and so they open up at midnight, and 10th is the food stamp day. So they spend most of their money there because they don't have food. And so all they're buying is like potato chips, pop,
all the junk that nobody needs. And yes. it costs too. I mean, but all yes. the things you mentioned earlier, Katani mentioned something about organic gardening and all, and people come out and chop wood and things in the summer. Do people come out and help garden? I mean, is gardening a big thing on the reservation?
It used to be, but a lot of people sold their land, and they don't have land. And so a long time ago, like our grandfathers, they still kept their land, retained their land so that they can have all these gardens and do all these things, but it's not so anymore. And a lot of our tribal members are landless. So.
Okay, I did not realize that. Years when I lived in the West, I lived by the Shoshone-Bannock Reservation at Fort Hall, and things were spread out. Even in the little town of Fort Hall, things were spread out. People had land, and I just thought that, that everybody would be able to garden somehow, but that's not the case now.
No.
So what's the answer, any of you? I mean, how can we get, like, real food to people and maybe, help them start growing their own in the good weather?
It'll take many things and which people don't have, like fencing your garden so that, you keep animals away. And also, like getting water to your garden, which people don't have. And so they need supplies, they need implements to do these things, and they don't have it. They're living
right.
from day to day.
Do most of the houses have water?
At the housing sites, they have water.
Okay, now the housing site, is that like
a clustered place?
A cluster, like a very small village?
Yes,
It's not like the projects in the city?
No.
It's very different. The projects in the city, they have gas hookups, they have a water system, there's these things don't exist out there. A lot of the homes that I remember when the last time I was out there, they're on wells.
Wow. Well, so the people that actually had the land and sold it, I mean, this was just because they were so poor without selling it, but then I'm sure they didn't get a fair price for it. And who bought it up? Who owns the land?
The tribe would sometimes buy it, or individuals if they have money, or either non-Indian. And so the whole reservation, you see a lot of checkerboard jurisdiction, because most of it is owned by non-Indians.
Oh, okay. Now, I would have thought that there would have been some kind of a law or something that would have kept non-Indians from buying it, but that's not the case. So,
Constitution, it's the tribal constitution, it's open to anybody.
Oh, that might not have been good. I don't know. What? So the non-whites that bought up the land, what are they doing with it? I mean, like, are they? Do they
most
build
it's all used for grazing.
Okay.
So you see a lot of cattle here on the reservation, and but those are not tribal. That's, you know, belong
right.
to non-Indian.
Okay. So they're grazing mostly. They haven't built buildings and then charge exorbitant rent or something. They're not acting as landlords in that way.
It used to be. It used to be until, you know, we fought, you know, to change the grazing ordinance. The grazing ordinance has a lot to do with that. And, like, you know, a lot of these areas where tribal members can live, because it's rented out, it's leased out, we had to fight with the tribal council to, you know, amend the ordinance so that people can start, you know, living on some of these lands. And they weren't allowed to gather or, you know, to, you know, hunt, you know, nothing. It was closed to people, so we had to change that.
That's ridiculous. Well, now, what about if somebody from the reservation wants to, oh, say, just go to the city, they want to move off, is it easy to do that or not?
Yes, it is uneasy to do that because, first of all, there's a lot of prejudice. And so as soon as they, especially like trying to rent a home,
mm-hmm.
soon as they know that you're Native American, there is some, you know, they have some policies. And so it's very hard to go into the city and just, you know, rent a place. You have all this it's open to anybody, but once if a Native American applies or, you know, they want to rent a place, you know, they're denied.
Right.
That's true.
But now it's easy enough to, like, legally to leave the reservation. There's
yes.
nothing that says that anybody must stay there. But,
yes.
you know, like you say, once somebody leaves, and some places are much more racially biased than others, I'm sure, but if you can get to some place where there's already natives, you might have a better chance then of working and living in a larger place. What about schooling? What's the school situation?
I know that there here in Porcupine District we have three schools. We have a parochial school, we have the BIA school, and then we have the county school. So we have three schools, but somehow we have a lot of dropouts, and our children are not encouraged to stay in school. And then we have a community. We have the community college.
Oh, there is a community college there.
Yes, at each district.
Hmm.
So there's community colleges.
Oh, wow. So there's nine districts on the reservation.
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh, are they all about equally the same size then?
Yes, they're probably Pine Ridge is the largest place, but out in the districts, they're all about the same.
Okay. So, so you do have schools, but the kids drop out. What, they drop out as soon as they turn 16, or they drop out younger? Does anybody ever then go around and, you know, like they used to have truant officers in the cities or small towns. If somebody's kid drops out of school, like at 14, I live in a small town currently. And
I used to have a grandson that went to school in Pine Ridge, and one of the problems he ran into was because he didn't have the right clothes, the right kind of shoes, and they made fun of him, and, you know, he just dropped out.
Right. I mean, that bullying, it seems like it's been getting worse lately. I mean, a lot of kids have been killing themselves, I mean, everywhere. It's not just
a lot of these parents can't afford jackets and nice clothes. You know, you can't afford it. So.
Right.
These children are affected by the income.
Oh, sure. Sure. I have to ask, and this is one of those questions because people say, oh, yeah, you know, people just hang around getting drunk. But is there a higher, I mean, truthfully, is there a higher percentage of people on the reservations that are drinking, do you think, than off the reservation?
Yes, there is. There is a higher percentage of people that drink. And like the community evergreen housing is one good example. Like probably every house, probably about 80% of the household there are, you know, people that drink. And they're also unemployed.
Sure. And then, is that of sheer frustration, desperation, and depression, I would think. But I also know then that when a lot of people are drinking, the babies that are born have that fetal alcoholism or that fetal alcohol syndrome. So what about the health then? Besides the fact that the food isn't what it should be. I mean, how are the kids and what's the health care like?
The health care of those children?
Mm-hmm. And just everybody. I mean, what are there a lot of clinics? Are there enough doctors? Are there enough just health care people on the reservation?
No. Pine Ridge has the bigger hospital, and Kyle, which is about 35 miles from here, has a clinic. And then it's about 100 miles from here to Wombly, and they have a small clinic. So we have three clinics on the reservation. And so basically I think Pine Ridge would probably have about 8 doctors, which would serve about 15, 16, 17,000 people. And then the smaller communities, they have probably about 4 doctors or maybe even less.
Maybe they have like nurse practitioners and people like that around.
Yes, they have. I think they have more practitioners. They can't keep a doctor here. And the reason why is because of the environment. There's nothing here, and people just aren't used to that.
There's no economy. You know, out here off the reservations, we're looking at an urban lifestyle that where median income is maybe $40,000-$50,000 annually. That's $50,000 a year. On the Pine Ridge, we're looking at $2,400 annually as a median income. And there is no economy out there.
Right. So I would think then that these clinics and places probably don't have all the equipment either that they need.
No.
So that would be discouraging for a doctor. But $2,400 a year, that is so far even below the poverty level. I can't imagine. Is there federal aid and it's just being misused or what?
There is. The Bureau has a general assistance, but you're only allowed like three months, I think. And when you use up your 3 months, then you're on your own. So you live without income. The children, they're qualified for TANF, and elders, they're qualified for SSI. So that's basically it. There's no other federal help. There's no other federal assistance. Nothing.
That is totally disgraceful, considering how the land was first stolen from the Native people, and then the Native people were herded onto this land and then just left to just get by however is possible. There are no casinos or anything there, am I right?
No, we have 2 casinos.
Oh, you do?
There's one close to Oglala, or past Oglala district, and then we have a casino out to Martin, South Dakota. But that's a smaller one.
Okay, well, I have a friend who's working in Minnesota trying to get the casino workers organized. And it's pretty hard. And, I mean, I have my own views on the casino thing, but tell me, all three of you, have the casinos helped the reservation at all?
I live here, and I don't even know what the casino is doing, because most of the income from the casino goes into the general fund, and the tribal council will spend those funds at their discretion. But from what I heard, I guess from those funds, they've been given, like, I think $4,000 to each district for at least every 2 months or 3 months. So then the district has to use that $4,000 to pay for their utilities or their operation costs.
Right, so they can't do anything extra with it, really. So.
No.
Wow.
And the other point that I think a lot of people don't see either, because they're not there, is that when you come on to the reservation, there's the casino. That's the first thing you see. And then into the center of town, it's 32 miles.
Yes.
So any jobs that were created only by those people who have the ability to have a car and the gas to put in it.
Right.
So,
and if they don't make that,
that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, sure, I could see that.
And that's just the Pine Ridge. That's not even counting the rest of the districts. The rest of the districts are way farther out.
Yeah. So it maybe not all has been cracked up to be in ways. Would you tell us again where to find out more information about what's going on and for the winter project to try to keep more people from freezing to death, because it's got down to what, like minus 15 or something there already?
Minus 25.
Minus 25.
Okay. Yeah.
And when you're dealing with... Go ahead.
Sorry.
Well, homes that aren't insulated and all that, the wind just whips through. So...
Right.
You can only do so much. I mean, you really need some heat. I mean, sure, people can hang up fabric and everything and try to put plastic on and winterize the best they can, but at minus 25, you need heat. So, yes, please tell
exactly.
us what to do.
Absolutely.
I agreed to come on tonight is because I really wanted to talk a lot about the issue, a lot about the efforts of the Tetumon Grandmother Society. Because
mm-hmm.
and there's been a relief fund, because right now, you know, at temperatures at minus 25, anyone would have to agree that lives are at stake, and
yeah.
that's why I agree tonight. So if we can get the word out on that, they are on Facebook at Mother Society Winter Relief Fund. If there's anyone that wants to donate. They can go directly to Katandi's Facebook and talk with her directly, Katandi Bolger.
They can also call me at 909-496-1126. And if you look it up on Facebook, it's the Tetewan Grandmothers Society Winter Relief Fund. If you type in T as in Tom, E-T-U-W-A-N, Grandmother's Society, it'll come up.
Right, and I will put it on Aaron Martifio page also. I know I have posted it. Everybody needs to do what they can. And for our listeners, if you can't give money, then go to the page and share it. I mean, try to talk to people who actually can help out. I mean, prayers are wonderful, and we need them, but we need cash too. For this, because the companies aren't going to bring propane out without being paid for it. So that's
yeah,
just the
and like I always say, if you can't if you can't donate, sharing is caring. So if you're on Facebook and you see it, just don't sit there and look at it. Share it, because you never know who you share is going to go to, and they might be able to help.
Right. Very much so. I want to thank all three of you for coming on and talking about the reservation and, I mean, how, what it's like, and then also what this winter. And this winter, I mean, we're just getting into it, and the temperature is so low there. So, I mean, we've got more months of this. And the you've got elders taking care of children and grandchildren. They need to have heat. That this is something that we take for granted.
Yes.
Right. So thank you all so much. And
I just hope that
you know, we can get some people sending some money to the companies. That's, I mean, all it takes is a call and your charge card. That this is it. So,
That's it.
So thank you very much. Myrna Young Bear.
Yeah.
Now
yes,
get this to Tandy Bolger. And Jim LaPointe.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good night.
Okay, thank you.
Good night. And now we've had guests from South Dakota and California talking about the Pine Ridge and the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota. And now we are with Sarit Jacobson in Tennessee. Hi, my friend.
Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, I am cold, but I'm not complaining. They were talking about on the reservation, it's minus 25 degrees.
And I am very overwhelmed by their hardship. It was hard to hear.
It is. It's very hard to hear. I mean, it's very hard. And you and I, being such foodies, and just hearing that, you know, they don't have the food. They have to go to like a convenience store, and we know a convenience store only sells junk. They have no fresh food, no fresh fruit or vegetables, and they, you know, they have the packaged macaroni and cheese and potato chips, you know, stuff like that. I mean. No, these people, this is hardship where they are. It's very hard. But
it's very hard. And for people who have always had everything, they will never really know.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, they can say, oh, that must be terrible. But they've never been hungry. And or they've never not had good food.
Yeah, I'm afraid in this country now, 1 in 6 people are on food stamps. Isn't that terrible?
That's terrible, and there is absolutely no excuse for it. We don't need to be killing people around the world, we being the government, and they need to be bringing some of that money to help people, create jobs, like what's his name, the president had promised. You know, the jobs that have been created are ones that are like, what, 15 to 24 hours a week and with no benefits, minimum wage. Those aren't jobs. You know, but that's a whole other thing. But we're going to talk about Palestine and so much. A 12-year-old was shot in the, was he 12 or 14? I might have this confused, was shot in the back the other day, killed by the Zionists. Yeah.
I read the testimony of the soldier that was with him in Hebrew from the Israeli paper.
Right. What was that?
They were very unhappy to see their co-soldier act this way. But there was no reason to shoot.
Well, good. At least, I mean, at least there's, okay, that gives me hope. I mean, they weren't supporting him then.
Not at all.
No. But
I have hope because I was in the Israeli military for 4 months, and all I saw... a bunch of men crying.
Yeah.
Everywhere,
I mean,
you go, there's crying or depressed. I don't know. I think all those fascists you see on Facebook are are not the majority.
Yeah, I think that there's some kind of an awakening, a wake up call. People, well, and just like you talk about breaking the silence, the
breaking very important to organization.
Yeah.
They had a breakthrough. Some university, I'll tell you where, is going to let them speak here in the United States.
Really?
I posted it on Daily Life in Palestine, my page on Facebook. Okay. I don't remember all the details.
But you mean that?
Yes.
These are former IDFers that will be speaking here?
Yes. I think
all
it's
right.
Pennsylvania. And a bunch of Israelis have went to Hebron to talk with the Palestinian leaders there about peace.
Really?
Yeah, they do that from time to time.
But see, that's it. The people want it.
Oh, the people really want it.
Right. I mean, on both sides. But it's the government that's getting something out of war, just like the government here in the United States, and the corporations. They're making so much money. They don't care about all the regular people being killed and harmed. I just saw it's raining some more in Gaza. Did I get that right? So the sewage is throughout the streets still.
Yes.
Because
no, they don't have anything. No gas, no electricity, no food.
No, just plenty of
no
food.
Medicine.
Right. Well, no medicine and not medical equipment like they need. And the equipment they have doesn't run because they have no electricity except some backup generators. So
it's appalling. Yeah, and it doesn't matter if they don't have fuel, Michael says.
Yeah. It's what do you say about generators?
They're useless without gas.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like Blaine had talked to us before about how the generators are so, they do the job, but they're dangerous. And we've heard of them blowing up and, you know, exploding.
Oh, yeah, a lot. Lots of house fires from the candles, lots of children being burnt. It's terrible.
Yeah. And then in the long run, with the generators, because they're usually down below and they're spewing out all that nasty stuff, and so children are breathing it, maybe more than adults, and so it's going to be a long-term detriment to their health. I mean, this is when the generators work, when there is fuel for them. But now that Egypt has closed even more tunnels, it's so hard to get anything into the country.
Yes, I'm afraid it's impossible.
I don't know what else is happening there. I mean, I was just a little bummed about the kid being shot, but what else is going on in the last few days, Sari?
People have been burning themselves.
Now that's Israelis, right? Yeah, but you know, it sure isn't on
admitting.
The.
Oh, in Palestine.
Oh, really?
We have in Israel. Yeah, we have more ladies burning themselves. A couple, another lady burned herself in her backyard in Dimona.
Oh, what was?
It's an epidemic.
Well, is that because of the government? I know a lot of people in Israel are suffering from. Lack of finances, was it that, or is it just because of the way the government's behaving? Did it give any reason for the ladies?
It's incredible economic oppression.
Okay.
The food prices are higher than here.
Wow.
Yes, even some double. So the salaries are not so good. There's not enough jobs, and unemployment for people over 40 is over 50%.
Oh, my goodness.
Tell me about it, especially women. Women get paid less,
sure.
15, 20% less than men in Israel, or like here.
Yeah, like here, so. Yeah. Yeah,
that's a problem. Big problem. They're too oppressed and depressed we are overwhelmed from every direction.
Yeah. I can't, you know, I used to occasionally, in the past, I would read about someone setting themselves on fire. And it was, or a couple people. And it seemed like it was always Buddhist monks. Testing like China being in Tibet or, you know, that type of thing. And then it started branching out and more. And then, you know, during we had the Arab Spring, which was actually technically started by the man in Tunisia. And then we had a couple people in Spain and just around. And then the idea of women in Israel self-immolating is just, like, wow, this is
it really
all,
is. That's
so
just a terrible thing. I wish they would stop. It doesn't seem to help. Bibi doesn't even care. The Israeli government doesn't care. They just make life harder for the poor.
Right. So it doesn't get worldwide, you know, the media doesn't get on it. It's not in mainstream media.
I guess the media is just there for the industrial war complex.
Pretty much. I mean, they don't want people to know, well, in the first place, you know, because Israel and the United States are supposed to be so close, and so they can't let the people in the United States know that people in Israel are unhappy with...
Oh, yeah. Many are leaving, by the way.
Where are they going, Sari? The ones that are leaving Israel. Where?
A lot went to Berlin.
Okay.
All over Europe.
Okay.
Holland. I know went to Sweden.
Right.
I have Israeli friends all over the world. Some even went here, came here to USA.
Yeah, I had talked with some who, you know, thought that they would like to come here. But then we have something like, I just read 40,000, I believe, Africans in Israel, that now the high courts have decided that they can hold them for a year without charging them.
Yeah, administrative detention for a year, and it's terrible conditions, I assure you.
Yeah.
I saw footage of the prisons they're staying in, and it's horrible. They put them in the middle of the desert where they don't see any trees. It's very cold in the winter, very hot in the summer.
And
not more human.
They have done nothing, absolutely nothing wrong, but come there to live. And
they're victims of their own Holocaust.
Yeah, yeah. Which is
so,
I don't get it, you know.
My friend Tamar Hoffman goes to get arrested all the time. I'm very proud of
her. Yeah, good for her, yeah.
She still went the other day again. She has to.
Right. Well, she can't live with herself if she doesn't. She's reached that point, I think. So,
absolutely. Everyone is doing what they can. Every friend I have is doing what they can.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, and she just almost, I mean, she knows it's really, really serious, but sometimes it's like she's looking at it as a lark, too. I mean, she has to laugh sometimes because otherwise she'd just be crying all the time. And as she marches off to try to get arrested, you know, it's, can you imagine?
She reminds me of myself when I talk to her.
Yeah, yeah.
Passion.
I see that.
And after she gets arrested, it gets her adrenaline going and she can't sleep, so we chat on Facebook.
Yeah, see, because then she's really up, right? It's like, yeah.
Yeah, she can't sleep. It's very upsetting. They investigate you with lights in your face, and they're mean, and they try to threaten you. They're not very nice.
Try to intimidate, yeah. Yeah, that's...
used to be an officer.
What about the officer?
An intelligence officer that used to activate spies for both sides.
Ah, oh.
Yes, and she's breaking the silence about it and letting me say it. Thank you, Tamar. She used to be an IDF intelligence officer who used to activate not just the Israeli spies, but also the enemy spies. What does that say? How much control do they have over both sides?
Yeah, yeah.
If they wanted peace, they could have peace. That's my proof.
Sure, they don't want. I mean, the corporations are making tons of money, and that's what they want.
Oh, yeah, they're making so much money.
And so as long as we let corporations rule our lives, we won't have peace. That's just...
Yeah, they're just psychopaths, people on top.
Right.
That's what it takes to get up there. Good people cannot rise to that.
To that level, because you have to walk on so many people to get there. All right, and to stay there. And it's like, sure, some of those people who are heading up their own, maybe their family business or corporation or something. Like, basically, maybe they have a good heart. The dog likes them, the kids like them, their partner likes them, their friends like them. I mean, like, they're regular people. However, they try to ignore, or they say, well, that's just business. And that's what you have to do in the business world, you know, dog eat dog. But I mean, some of them, at least once in a while, act like they have a conscience about something, but some of them is absolutely not. And, I mean, look at the government, the people that we have put in power in this country. I mean, they're disgraceful to just the whole term humans. I mean, what can you say? They don't care. They like having a title. They like having all the perks that go with their office. They like knowing that once they leave being a senator or a representative, that they can be hired by some corporation to lobby for them. You know, it's like guaranteed income for life. Plus they get pensions. I mean, you know, they get a lot of perks along with the money. And so they don't care about the people. It doesn't matter. And so, you know, that this kind of a system, this two-party system that is very similar, the two parties, has got to go. But and I
kind of like independence, actually. Bernie Sanders is kind of cool sometimes.
Yes,
I don't know what talking about Israel is.
Somebody was saying the other day that, I don't know if it was Brian or somebody else, that, you know, he might have to think about it if Bernie Sanders actually got to the point that he would be running. Whoever it was said that, you know, they might vote for him. I don't know. I mean, I just think that anything to prolong this pain of capitalism is not a good thing.
Not voting.
It's just too painful. But did anything else happen this week or since we've talked?
Yeah, the spending of Bibi Netanyahu came out. He spends a lot of money.
Ah.
I don't know if it was this or last week, but he spends like 6,000 shekels a month on candles.
On candles? Now, how much would 6,000 shekels be?
About $2,000.
Wow. I love candles, but...
He's a great spender. Thousands on water, on food... People are pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what does he do with them? I mean, how that's an awful lot of candles. I mean, I don't care how expensive the candles are. That's a lot of candles.
He thinks he's a king.
Well, yeah, that's true. So he has to, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that the people are upset with him.
They're very upset.
Good thing. That's good. Yeah.
There's a lot of, yeah.
No, I was just going to say, we would be remiss if we didn't mention Nelson Mandela and dying, because he had, you know, said for a long time that Palestine was going through what South Africa went through.
Worse, and he called Israel a terrorist state.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So, I mean, he was definitely one of the good guys on our side. And he will be missed. He was very much a man who understood what was happening. He was friends with Gaddafi. He loved him. He was friends with Fidel. He really, Arafat, he had a sense of what was right in the world and definitely what was wrong. So, well, Israel is a terrorist country.
Oh, yeah, people in the West Bank are afraid to leave their home after dark. If you talk to them on Facebook, they'll all tell you about how the settlers have been throwing rocks on them, threatening them, verbally abusing them. It's very scary to live there right now.
Well, and I just saw that they were talking about 24,000 more units for settlers. Possibly.
Yeah, a man was stabbed today in West Jerusalem. Palestinian man was stabbed.
Oh. I mean, Jerusalem, of all, you know, it's so funny because three different major religions claim the city, and it's just so full of hate and unrest. It's very ironical. That you can't
and they
even
arresting people every night, breaking into villages, practicing shooting in villages.
Well, that's it. They're
breaking.
Practicing. They
yes.
practice with new weapons and new plans. New what do you call it? You know, like some type of a plan or a routine, or I can't get the word I want, but they practice on the Palestinians.
Like yesterday, they did that in a town called, I don't know how to say it, but the town is called Kabatia. They shot at civilians. That's a report from an Israeli friend, which caused, I have to read it in Hebrew, but Google Translate is not good.
Well.
They arrested yesterday 14 and 15-year-old brothers or boys.
Yeah.
They went to a village called Awawa, just harassing people, inviting them for investigation, breaking into homes, putting surprise checkpoints. That's a common thing, which makes people life really hard because everywhere they go, there's a two-hour checkpoint.
Right, and I didn't really realize that until recently, that they just throw them up here and there. It's not that they have, I mean, they do have set checkpoints, but then they just throw up more whenever they feel like it.
Jenin had problems. They went in. The army went into Jenin the other day.
Yeah, and arrested people, I suppose, or
shot their guns.
Something, yeah.
They arrested two students, but we don't know their names yet.
They're still holding them?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh God. Well, just say a prayer for them. It is not. Being detained by the IDF is not, or IO, it's not,
not good.
It's not, no, it's not
know.
Good. In the, anyone,
they will torture people.
Yeah.
They were harassing Bedouin, destroying their tents.
Yeah, sometimes it's just pure malice, and then other times it's like, well, let's test this out. Let's see how this works. So, we'll test it out on the Palestinians. We'll test it out on the Bedouin. So even they do all this physical stuff, but they do so much psychological too.
It's insane. There's reports of settler attacks the other day on one of the town where Jesus was from or something.
Nazareth?
What called in English.
Bethlehem?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, sure, because, nothing is, while a lot of people around the world look at those places as sacred because of the story, to those people it means nothing. I'm a believer in letting people have their sacred spots, whether it's sacred to me or not, it is to them, and they should be able to have them without them being fired on or bombed or droned or something, that's just wrong.
Spots are beautiful historic places. I used to like to go see them when I was a teenager.
Sure.
I used to go visit churches and the monasteries on the mountains. There were so many religions there on the mountains in Haifa and monasteries, and they're beautiful.
Yeah, I've seen pictures. They are. And then you think about these soldiers with all their weapons, stomping around, just tearing stuff down, or watching while the settlers tear things down, or however.
Yeah. More people have been arrested yesterday in a town called Juba.
Juba.
They arrested two boys. They're picking mostly on young men under the age of 40.
Yeah, well, on young men like under the age of 16, a lot of. They're really.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
14, 16.
Children. Yeah.
Unbelievable cruelty. And that's the worst thing about being under military occupation, treated like you're not human.
Right. And then that works on everybody in the family, because when you have your 15-year-old son being detained and tortured in some Israeli jail, I don't know what would be much more demoralizing than that. So it just works on the whole family, what they're doing. But, wow, I don't know. And, usually they have a big thing at Bethlehem at Christmas time, because that was when Jesus was, or where he was supposedly born and all that. I wonder what's going to happen this year. I guess we'll see.
Roger Waters comparing Israel to Nazi Germany.
Yes. Love that man. He has been pro-Palestine for so long, and he was very right. A lot of people
sounds like many scholars and many Israeli lefties that I know or grandchildren of Holocaust survivors do that too.
Sure. But Sarit, we've got to go, and we'll be back next week, more news on Palestine, and then that will be I think next week is our last show before the holidays, I believe. So, anyway, you have a good week.
You too.
See, and stay warm, honey. I'm just layering up where I am, so we'll be fine.
I have the heat on.
Yeah. Well, and you've got the animals, too, just like I do, and they put out a lot of heat, too. So...
They do.
Good night.
Night.